Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by England's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing today? On Tuesday.
I'm good.
No, it's Monday. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Chris, we're recording a little earlier. We usually record on a Tuesday, but this week we recorded on a Monday. So I am fresh from getting home from a mate had a little do at what can only be described as a kind of like a 90s weekend at Butlins in Bognor Regis.
Oh, God, I know it well. Yeah. How'd it go?
It wasn't very good, Chris, but we had fun. It was astonishingly stag do-y, which we kind of knew it was going to be anyway, but I didn't know how stag do-y it was going to be. I don't know where all these people come from. I don't know where they're going back to, but they certainly like drinking at 9 o'clock in the morning, I tell you that.
How would you describe Butlins to our listeners that aren't from the UK? And this should be fun to hear.
It's a holiday camp of the 1960s, 50s sort of thing. It was very much like lost a lot of money in the 70s, it felt like. The arse fell out of the market. People started going abroad for their holidays. And so therefore they're in a situation where they couldn't spend a lot of money on, doing up their camps. So now there's like only about three or four left in the country. And off season, because we have terrible weather off season, out of summer, it's very much come a place where at the weekends it's got taken over by like music festivals and stuff. So indoor music festivals, you get a chalet, you don't have to camp. You get to watch some bands and stuff. But this time around, it wasn't really bands, Chris. It was boy bands of the late 90s, like 911, a girl group by the name of Bewitched, and Cleopatra, and the Artful Dodger,
remember all of those artists. Bloody hell, that's quite nostalgic. Bewitched, they were interesting. Wow, yeah. Sounds all right. I just got back from Sapporo, the first time I've been there since our trip together, and I was doing a video with Connor. And I love Sapporo. It's such an amazing little city. I say little, crisp. It's like Japan's fifth biggest city, but we were doing some filming. I can't say what it is. Secrecy is involved. But on one of our nights out, unrelated to the video, we went to this bar. The very bar that I took you to, which you can watch in the video, guys, where Natsuki keeps electrocuting his fingers on some sort of toy and he keeps losing. We went there and there was a poker table, and Connor loves poker. I used to play poker a lot. And we found our way playing poker for 2 hours at this amazing table. Over the course of 2 hours, looking over the neon-lit Sapporo skyline, it was like a James Bond film. And it was really cathartic and brilliant because Connor won for the first hour. He was doing really well. He was in the lead and he wiped out a few other players. And with poker, I'm good and I bide my time. Whereas Connor was like, gunzo, guns blazing. And he sort of knocked out players and got some chips. And then I sort of learned what he was doing. I learned that Connor likes to bluff an awful lot and intimidate other players with his chips, unsurprisingly. And I went all in on like one hand and took all his chips in one foul sweep and switched him from top of the board to winner to loser. And watching him go from like being this arrogant winner to like, well, it's getting late, we should go home now, in the case of one hand. It was very, very rewarding and very cathartic and reminded me of the brilliance of poker. But what I will say and this is the tragedy of the night, is to buy in, it cost 4,500 yen, which is about $45, £30. And I, in Japan, you can't gamble, right? We all know this. Yeah. You can't gamble.
Right. So could you, so you buy in for all that money, what's that, 30 quid or whatever, 35 quid, and you presumably don't get any money out.
Well, I won like $100 worth of chips. Basically triple my money, I think. Triple my money. And I thought, I had read it, that there was a way they would give you your money back. So with pachinko, right, you can't turn your balls into money. You sort of hand in your balls at the end of a round, you get a little ticket, and then you go about a block away to another building to a man who just so happens to want your ticket and will turn it into money. It's just a coincidence. There's no way it's related or affiliated with a pachinko parlor. And I thought I would get that with the poker, and I would double my money somehow. And then I was like, right, money back. I said to the dealer, and he was like, no money. I was like, what? And he basically gave me some like Monopoly paper money. And I was like, you're having a laugh. And Connor laughed his fucking head off. He was so happy that even though I'd won, I'd walked away with nothing. Although the good news is, when I do go back to the bar sometime, maybe next week, I can go back and use my Monopoly money to convert it into chips and carry on the game, so to speak.
Right.
But a little bit annoying. Did want money.
It's a little bit annoying because you should be able to exchange that Monopoly money for, you know, new, like, actual money. That's not fair.
I know, right? Bloody gambling laws. Gosh. But Well, I don't know if I can convert the chips or the Monopoly money into, like, drinks, in which case that would be quite an equitable.
Yeah.
That'd be quite a good little return, that. I'll have to.
Yeah.
I was really interesting. We were playing with this dealer for like 2 hours, and he was really professional. He was quite a young guy. He must have been about 39. He looked about 30. Mm. And I was like, what do you do here then? He's like, oh, I'm the owner of the entire like building. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I'm just the owner. I was like, are you sure? I was so like, I was a little bit drunk, a little bit confused. This man was the dealer. And I was like, are you sure you're the owner of this massive bar? It was a big bar, you know, like 20 members of staff. There was 100 people there. I was like, are you sure you're the owner? And he was like, yeah, I'm the owner. He said, I just got bored working behind the bar. So I was like, let's have a poker table. And so he does poker every night. He runs the poker tables, and that's his new favorite thing. So if you go to Sapporo, if you go to Flair Bar, it's called, you happen to see the poker dealer by the table, go and play and have a chat with him. His name's Shinya. Great guy.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I'll be back to take more of his imaginary money. We got a story this week from Dave, who says, hello, Chris and Pete. Dave. Greetings from Essex. You can come back here, Chris, but not all that bad, really. Oh, no, not Essex. All my friends are from Essex. I don't like Essex. Pete's in Essex right now. Anyway, after almost pissing myself with laughter at the sheer misery and pain that Chris went through on the latest crane game competition video with Connor, God, I hate that video, I thought I'd share an experience I had when I first went to Japan and played a machine in the Sega arcade in Akihabara. I saw at the front of the arcade there were these special machines that had very limited anime figures of the latest film of Evangelion. The idea of the machine was to put a metal rod through a hole to release the prize. Anyway, I joked to a friend that I was great at the Guitar Hero game and thus could win this easily with one go. Well, something crazy happened. Some crazy thing happened. I actually did win. Bloody hell. That's quite impressive, Dave, given I did a crane game for like six hours. I spent $500 and I got like a small box of disappointing chocolates. So well done. However, what made this more memorable, says Dave, was the fact the machine started to make a loud celebration noise. The lights were flashing and everyone stopped what they were doing and just looked at me. I was mortified and confused as this was a new experience compared to Britain's machines. And then, if only to make my experience even more embarrassing, there was an arcade lady on her actual knees at my feet holding out a bag congratulating me on my win. This was all rather too much to take in, and having everyone stare at me made my cheeks blush, my heart race and head spin. I calmed down and everyone went back to their business, and I took a deep breath and tried to let it sink in what had happened. After regaining my composure, my friend told me about another figure that was also limited, same setup. So I thought, why not? And it happened all over again. Blaring music, people staring, the same lady bowing at my feet, kneeling before me. To say this experience was bewildering and embarrassing is an understatement. Have you guys ever had an embarrassing experience like this in Japan? Keep up the good work, Chris. I love the new studio. Have a great Christmas and Happy New Year to you both and your families. Have a good one. Dave from Essex, Pete's neighbour. Have you ever won anything on one of these bloody crane games, Pete? I hate them so much.
I've won a few things, and I did very much enjoy your Conocido Vieira and your little video where you went around and tried to win as much stuff as you possibly could. And you won like a packet of chips. Conor seemed to be more successful with the actual little swords and toys and stuff, but you didn't you win a big pipe of Pringles?
I won a pipe of Pringles.
You won a big pipe of Pringles.
Right, in the video, what I didn't know at these crane game arcades is you can ask staff to sort of help you out and be like, oh, simasen, chotto, no, taskate. And they're like, they'll right. move the object slightly closer to the hole so you can get it out.
What?
And Connor
that's
was doing
cheating.
This. Exactly. That's what I said. And he's been doing this for like 5 or 6 hours, winning like on an order of magnitude above what I was winning. And I was like, what are you doing, Connor? He's like, oh, you just ask them to help you and they'll do it. And it's like,
they'll
fuck off.
Move it. That's cheating. That's so naughty. Really? That is cheating.
Bastard. So
the only experience I've had with those machines, you know, the ones that you don't see in Japan, you see in Britain, where the coin, the 2p coin or the 10p coin, where you roll it down.
I love those ones.
It kind of sits. Yeah, it's just kind of like it goes, moves back and forth, and it'll dispense, you know, a certain amount of coins every hour or something because it just gets pushed to the front. I remember when I was a kid, I was like going, now I need to get those coins out. What if I try and lift the machine?
Oh my God.
And of course that's impossible. Of course that's impossible because there's weights in the bottom of the machine to stop you from doing that. And the security guard came over. I was only about 8 or 9. He said, you know where the door is? And I just started to walk out. Tail between my legs. No 2p coins left.
What's Pete Donaldson and Connor got in common? They're both cheats, ladies and gentlemen. They both game the system.
Cheaters.
Cheating scum. I hate those machines. Yeah, I miss those though, because in Japan, again, because you can't gamble with money, they don't have the machines where there's literally money hanging off the edge that you have to sort of bang and get off. But when I was in this crane game video doing this video with Connor, I won a big tall packet of like crisps, this pizza flavored crisps, right? I won like 2 or 3 tubes. And the way the tubes are, they sort of fall forward in the machine, but they don't come out of the machine. You have to ask someone to help you over. So I asked a member of staff. I was like, oh, someone said my winnings. Can you get them for me? And she was like, yep, no problem. And she opened the cabinet and just put the crisps back on the shelf and shut it. And I was like, what? What are you doing? I've just won all that. And luckily, another member of staff who had a brain came over and was like, oh, chotto mate, the guy fucking won the crisps. Get him out again. And it was just ridiculous. Another time, at the start, I tried to win this Curious George, who's some little weird monkey toy.
Little monkey, yeah.
I tried to win him for about an hour. I put in like $100 to win a little crappy monkey toy. And then the machine just broke and took all my money and didn't work. And so this poor woman had to come over and open the machine up. And while she was trying to fish out like $100 worth of coins, I just carried on playing over the top of her, which you can watch in the video. But it's not fun. I don't really enjoy crane games. They're fun for like 5 minutes, but this was anything but fun, and I don't want to do it again. Like I get physically sick at the sight of a crane machine, but I do want to play it back at the UK. And all this talk of gambling, I'd love to go to a casino and play poker in the UK. People take poker so seriously, don't they? They have like you go to a poker table. I used to play at my university every Thursday, and like you go there with your mates for a bit of fun, hopefully win some money and have a good night out. But like, there's people with like sunglasses and their hats are down. They've got like a baseball cap covering their face. Yeah. And they won't like smile. They won't show any emotion. They're just there to win. And they never win because they take it too seriously.
The thing about a lot of poker players is that it doesn't matter how good you are. You can, as a beginner, kind of bluff your way through the first few hands sometimes. You can
beginner's
luck. It's one of the few kind of games like that you can just kind of go, I don't really know what I'm doing, and somehow win. Because my partner used to work on Sky Poker for like 5 years, where she'd just sit in a set and talk to poker professionals while the online players would be playing. And it was a really difficult job trying to make poker sound interesting for 5 hours ago. and she just kept doing that for ages. And I played her at poker, and I think I won the first two rounds. She was an expert at it. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. He's a nice guy. I like that king. He looks nice.
God, you're my idea of a nightmare when it comes to poker. But I remember I was the same. When I went to the poker club with my friends at university in my first year, I vividly remember winning the first time, like a lot of money. And I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I was like copying the guy on the left of me. I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, all in. Yeah, king. I've got a king of hearts and an ace of nothing. And like, I you just win. You can win, unfortunately. In the long run, you can't. But in the short term, you can. But there's nothing like less fun than playing poker with people that don't really know what they're doing, because then it just sort of
brings the
atmosphere a little bit. And
Look at you gatekeeping. Unbelievable.
Gatekeeper of fun. That's who I am.
You only want to play with winners. Outrageous.
Speaking of winners, this week a Japanese train driver sued JR West, Japan's second biggest rail company, some money for some wages they took of his. As we all know, in Japan, trains are never late, and when they are, it's a national scandal. It's always in the media. And a few years ago, I think 2020, train company JR West fined a train driver after a work mix-up in June 2020 caused a one-minute delay to operations. A one-minute delay! That's a pretty world-ending thing in Japan. I remember it was a national scandal when the train was like 10 seconds late. So 1 minute is end-of-the-world stuff.
It was like half a minute early. People got really upset about a train that left half a minute early. That was the one we heard over here.
End-of-day scenario. A train 30 minutes early. Who'd have thought it? But this train driver, right, he was docked 56 yen. Do you know how much that is, Pete? Do you know what 56 yen is?
I think it's probably around 30 pence. And you only asked me that because I was drinking my coffee. I'm actually drinking a coffee while we're on the show.
Right. So this train driver, he got docked some wages for this one-minute hold-up. He got docked wages of 56 yen, which is 49 cents or 36 pence. Basically, to put it bluntly, it's fuck all. But he argued that from the distress that JR West caused him from this, he argued that it was bad for his mental health and whatnot. So he decided to seek some damages for the mental anguish caused by the ordeal. And the employee is seeking 2.2 million yen, $19,000, £14,000 over this whole debacle of having his wages docked 56 yen. Apparently, the unnamed man was scheduled to pilot an empty train to Okayama Station in the south of the country, but arrived at the wrong platform while waiting to take over from the previous driver. By the time he realised his mistake and had rushed to the correct platform, the transfer between the two drivers had been delayed by 2 minutes, leading to a one-minute delay in the train's departure. So JR West, they docked him his money. They docked him 85 yen. 75 cents or 55 pence, but later agreed to reduce this monumental fine to 56 yen after he went to the Labour Standards Inspection Office. However, the employee refused to accept the reduction and has argued that the delay caused no actual disruption and the train was empty anyway. So he decided, give me 2 million yen, give me $20,000. This is quite an interesting situation because you don't really hear of these sort of legal situations happening in Japan so much. It's very much... The sort of thing you hear mainly coming out of America, right, where people are much more likely and willing to take legal action over things like this. What do you make it all out of all this ridiculousness, Pete? What are your thoughts?
Well, you don't hear this story very often because people don't generally try and sue their employers and that's why, kind of one of the reasons why employment law is so buggered in Japan. People don't kind of stand up and sort of say, no, I'm not doing that, you shit peas. That's not fair what you're doing. And it isn't fair. It's ridiculous. But I don't know what grounds he's trying to sue on through emotional thing, because literally he was late for work. So therefore... he knows what happens when you're late for work. He knows the situation that you're in if you're late for work. You know what those ramifications are and knock-on effects are. But I don't think he's going to win that money, to be quite frank.
It will be interesting to see what happens, to be honest. But it's a little bit farcical. It's all, you know, maybe he did, you know, maybe he did get some bad mental health anguish out of this. But we will see. But as you mentioned earlier, the train that arrived 20 seconds early. Did you know that if a train in Japan is delayed by more than 5 minutes, passengers are issued with a certificate that they can use as an excuse of being late? So when you turn up to the workplace, you can literally tell your boss, it wasn't my fault, the train was late. And in the UK, you'd be like, yeah, sure it was. The train, wasn't it? Yeah, it's the train, wasn't it, Pete? It was the train. Why are you always late, Pete? Why are you still here? But in Japan, you get a certificate and you show your boss and they'll go, all right, because it's so bloody rare that you kind of need to do it. I remember I've tried, whenever I'm late, which happens literally every appointment I have ever, I'm like, oh, it was a train, wasn't it? And they're like, no, it wasn't. I'm like,
yeah, no, it wasn't. It was never the train. Train, it was the certificate then.
Of course it was. I was, yeah. I should get a little printer and print out certificates whenever I'm late. Just have them in my person. just print out some fake certificates. But yeah. I think that's kind of cool. And to this day, I don't think I've ever been on any form of Japanese transport that's late. So it really does live up to its reputation.
If I was on a British train and they had to do that every single time, I could wallpaper my fucking house with it, with the certificates.
All too well, you know, all too well.
Yeah.
We'll be back with the fax machine and your questions in just a moment.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Hi, I'm Flo Lloyd Hughes.
I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
And I'm Chloe Morgan.
Join us every week on our brand new show, Upfront, on Football Ramble Presents. We'll get stuck into the biggest stories in women's football every Tuesday, from the latest in the WSL. Gareth Taylor said, oh, well, actually, we were playing 3-4-3. And we moved to 4-4-3-3. If you look at any of the footage, if you look at the way the players played in that first half, there were four players playing at the back. That sort of comment speaks of a manager who doesn't quite know what they're doing.
To how the Lionesses are shaping up ahead of a home Euros next summer. For me, I would pick Lee Williamson. I would just go for it now. For a younger age captain, you've got some big tournaments coming up. I think a lot of players think she's got a really great mentality, gets on with a lot of people. For me, she's a born leader, and I think she will be England captain at some point.
And what it's really like being a player in women's football today.
From my own experiences of being in a situation like that, I mean, you know, when we got promoted when I was with Spurs, that was phenomenal. I was, you know, first choice keeper. You know, then you go into the WSL for our first season, and all I wanted to do was get WSL experience.
Join us every Tuesday for Upfront. Search Football Ramble Presents in your podcast app. Subscribe now.
Football Ramble Presents is a Stack production.
And we're back with the fax machine. What do we got from our listeners this week, Mr. Dawson?
We got a message from Ankit from India. Hope you're doing great, says Ankit. I'll be moving to Japan coming April for university. And my question for you is, how do I get used to eating rice with chopsticks? It's rice. I've been practicing for some time now, and I've reached a decent mileage of one medium-sized ball per hour. I thought you were going to say one medium-sized grain per hour. Please share some tips and tricks on how to master chopsticks, or I might have to sustain myself on a diet of chips and G Fuel. Pete's crisscrossing chopstick holding technique is actually pretty useful. Thank you, Ankit. For the first time, my poor chopstick discipline, my poor ohashi hashes, is absolutely just, you know, someone actually quite likes it, thinks it's quite useful and easy.
Pete, the way you hold chopsticks looks like someone has hit your fucking hand with a mallet. Like, I don't want anyone encouraging Pete Donaldson's questionable chopstick handling methods. Go and watch any video of Pete Donaldson in. Eating with chopsticks. It's a horror
show. This is the history of chopsticks. People using chopsticks for like 1,000 years, 2,000 years, probably more. And then I arrive on the aisles 5 years ago and I'm like, come on, guys, get it together. There's an easy way of doing this.
No, I forbid anyone to encourage Pete. He can't. No. I was always rubbish with chopsticks. We have them in the UK. Ankit's from India. Don't they have... They have rice in India, don't they? Basmati?
Yeah, long grain? I mean, use forks or hands, isn't it? Forks or hands.
Good point. I was always historically rubbish using chopsticks in the UK when I went to like a Chinese or Japanese restaurant. But I went on a trip to China for a month with a group from my university. And in China, when you go out for like lunch or dinner with a group, you get around a big round table and you get all the plates and they're in a sort of thing in the middle that spins around. Mm. And it is a battle to the death. You know, you've got to get your food quick so your friends don't, and you've got to eat the food before they do. If you get trapped on a desert island with me, you are fucked because I will eat the food before you do. But I was rubbish at chopsticks, but I got very good in the space of like the first 72 hours in China because I realized if I wasn't good, if I didn't move swiftly, then I wouldn't get all the prawn crackers and egg fried rice that I deserve. So I genuinely, you find once you just get there in the heat of the moment, you will get better. You will improve. But just get a bucket of rice and get practicing.
Do you not think that... I mean, very much enjoying the image of you on a desert island by yourself and one friend with a fucking lazy Susan dishes you've made. A monkey and a pineapple that you found on the island. Just on this lazy Susan.
A monkey and a pineapple. That's the Pete Donaldson diet.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's new keto. I think eating egg fried rice, that must be the enemy of chopsticks because the oil separates the grains of the rice and it makes it actually quite hard to pick up. It's got to be quite dry. Sticky rice is the easiest to eat. And that does help you in Japan because most of the rice you see at like breakfast and meal times, curries and stuff, it's quite sticky rice. So it's quite easy to bunch up on your chopstick, however you want to hold them.
Yeah, that's a good point. The rice is so much easier to eat here than, say, like China, I find. The rice all sort of clumps together quite nicely. So you got that to your advantage, Ankit. But don't worry, I'm sure I get the hang of it. You'll be fine. We got one here from Jason. He said, hello, Pete and Chris. My name's Jason from Missouri. Love the podcast. My question is it normal in Japan to take home doggy bags, aka leftovers, from restaurants? The serving sizes in restaurants here in rural Missouri are often so large that taking half of your meal home is almost guaranteed. Keep up the good work, guys. All the best, Jason. I'd say it's not as common as the UK or the US, but it does exist. Like certain restaurants do it. Like they don't, the culture of not leaving too much food behind is a big one in Japan. They say motainai culture is kind of like don't waste things. Even though the country wastes an awful lot of plastic and an awful lot of everything and they individually wrap bananas. But anyway, that's a topic for another day. They don't leave things behind here in Japan. They eat it all. So it's common, but I think some restaurants, if you were like doggy bag on a geisha mask, first of all, they wouldn't know what the hell you were on about. And second of all, some of them wouldn't do it. So I don't know, take it on a case by case situation, to be honest, Jason. But I think you'll find the portions in Japan do not come anywhere close to the sort of bucket load of food you get in America. Like I, you know, whenever I go to America, which is twice, I'm always shocked and disturbed by how much bang for your buck you get at any restaurant. Like it's an order of magnitude more than Japan or the UK. And yeah, it's a bit mental, to be honest. How do they do it? How do you American folks eat so much food? It's mental.
most times you're in a situation in Japan where if you want in the menu, there's always like you can ask for more rice. You can ask for like a bigger portion if you want. And it's never much more money. You can just sort of go, you can have an extra big portion, but they just don't want to waste food. It's not even about how much bang for the buck you're getting. It's just that they don't want to waste food. And I have on my more than one occasion sort of gone to one of those little machines in a ramen shop or a sort of set sort of curry shop or something and pressed too many buttons and ordered three family-sized meals ridiculously. So I've had to sort of go, "Oki tsugiru," sorry.
That's a good point. It's true, actually. You do, like, with a lot of restaurants, like, say... tonkatsu, one of my favorite dishes, tonkatsu, breaded pork cutlet. You get all you can eat, like cabbage, and all you can eat rice, right? So the amount you get, for a lot of people, when I go with Natsuki, it's never enough cabbage, it's never enough rice. So you just order it again. And so I think that they sort of handle it better in Japan in that way. They don't just shove a load of food on a plate. They sort of bring it out, of course, you know, at your whim and at your desire. Yeah. And that leads to a lot less wastage. We've got one here from Ario. I will let you handle that, Pete, because I'm going to have a sip of my cafe latte.
Oh, latte. Dear Chris, what time did you get to bed this morning?
I got to bed at 7 o'clock in the morning, Pete, because I was uploading a video about the Abroad in Japan studio, which we'll talk about in the next episode. But you know what? I feel alive, and I don't know how.
You feel alive now?
I'm just excited to be talking to you, Pete. It's the highlight of my afternoon.
I like the idea of you sitting in your deserted Akihabara street or whatever, your dirty little street, until 6 o'clock in the morning, and then leaving, walking outside in Sendai, and it being daytime almost immediately. So you go from nighttime to daytime really, really quickly. Amazing.
It's true. When I went to bed, the sun was up and it looked absolutely beautiful. And then I died.
Ario from Germany. Hello, Ario. Dear Chris and Pete, my name is Ario. In case you don't know how to pronounce it, it's a bit like Oreo, but it starts with an A. I'm an Indonesian person living in Germany, and I am Muslim. I'm interested to move in Japan someday, even though in the last few years I've heard that Japan has become more Muslim friendly. This is one of the things I wanted to make sure of beforehand. So my question is, what are the chances of finding a halal butchery or at least Middle Eastern shop in Japan? Ario from Germany. I mean, Japan is kind of famous, even in its most metropolitan areas, as being not particularly diverse. But there are, of course, like there are in any kind of city, little pockets of where you can find sort of, Middle Eastern interest shops. I suppose we can buy the food that you like and the food that you eat and the food that religiously you can eat. Would it be fair to say that once you get out of the Tokyo metropolitan district, it becomes a little bit harder?
That's a fair assumption, yeah. I think that there's a sizable population from Indonesia, I think Malaysia, and a few Muslim countries, and certainly in the cities, Tokyo, even Sendai, you can find halal meat without too much difficulty. Mm. If you go into the countryside, then I think that's the only time you'll have a few issues. Like I don't think I've been to many yakiniku restaurants, like grilled meat restaurants where they serve like halal food outside of cities, but I think as long as you're in a city, I think you'll be okay, to be honest. Ario, I don't think you'll be too bad, to be honest. There is a sizable population from Indonesia growing in places like Tokyo, so I think you'll be all right. I don't think it'll be too much of an issue. But if any of our listeners have any kind of experience in that field, let us know. Keep the questions and stories coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back next week, or rather on Saturday or Sunday, to do it all over again. I still don't know the day. It's Sunday, isn't it? We'll be back then to do it all over again on the Abroad Japan podcast. But for now, guys, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great few days. We'll see you then to do it all over again right here on the Abroad Japan podcast. Bye for now.
Japan is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.